Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, hey, hello. Leavers and believers, welcome to Leaving Hillsong. This is part two of Into the House. My name is Tanya, and I am welcoming you to this show. It's been a long time coming, this episode. We've been trying to plan it and get together for over a year now, actually, this series, starting with some stories of mental health that you would have heard with Sarah in Delusions of Reference, and then Britt's own story in the Prosperity Lounge, including a bonus story of going out to Bobby and Brian's and getting to purchase their very own furniture. Make sure you grab those episodes and part one of this one, because it's all about Mercy Ministries. Mercy Ministries was originally called a rehabilitation centre for young women in trouble, and I think you and I all know what trouble they were referring to. And it turned out to be such a profitable exercise that the criteria was expanded to include eating disorders, mental illness, you know, anything where vulnerable women could be convinced to go and stay in a rehab program, a Bible-based rehab program, and get treatment. And that's where Britt and Sarah met in 2007, I think the year was. And we've heard their stories individually, and the start of their experience at Mercy. After the Australians made a lot of fuss and bother, and with huge thanks to an extremely professional and wonderful journalist called Ruth Pollard. The program was shut down in Australia by the end of 2008 or 2009, I think. Thanks overall, I mean, you know, almost completely to the courage of women like Britt and Sarah, who, you know, having left, just did not want this to happen to anybody else. And the program was shut down in Australia, and yet it continues, largely in the United States, but also in other places around the world. And so did the practices that it was shut down for here. Same. Please take your time with these episodes. It's some pretty harrowing stuff. I'm sitting in Sydney's Hyde Park right now, and those are some bats you can hear in the background. You just got to do what you can do in the world of podcasting. So please take your time there. You know, quite a few issues in this that are quite disturbing. So, you know, go easy on yourself and take your time. The spiritual abuse stuff is just next level. the psychological, financial, social, physical. I mean, it's just horrific. But they got out and they lived to tell the tale. Sadly, not everybody did with Mercy Ministries. And rebrand it all you like, it's just as destructive. We left off last time making some links between Mercy Ministries, which was one of Hillsong's favourite little projects when it was out, and yet they seemed to drift off when things were unpleasant. Not dissimilar to the way they treat individuals, staff, volunteers. They take all of the credit and none of the responsibility. Let's go back into the house with Brit and Sarah. You ended up graduating and then what, went back to normal life? I mean, is that how that works? How do you get out of there, Brit?
So there were three ways to get out, or kind of four. So there was graduating, which is like a set date, and you have a big ceremony and you get a great bracelet and like everybody comes and wishes you well and you spruik your testimony and then see you later. There was a process called walking it out, which meant you were told a date in the future that you were going to be leaving. However, they wanted to watch your progress outside the home, and then you would be contacted and be given a graduation date. There was dismissal, so either for medical reasons or for just pure defiance, like if you didn't agree with the program or the teachings or you broke a certain number of rules, then you would be dismissed, or you could just leave.
Or if you continue to struggle with your issue and blamed.
If you're not showing any signs of getting better, then yeah, it was Mercy's not the place for you. See you later. So I ticked the walking it out box, and so got given a date and got told that I would be graduating in however long. They would keep in touch, and they had like this whole aftercare program, which was basically just this lady sending me emails saying that I was a beautiful princess daughter of the king that screams Hillsong. And yeah, long story short, I did not end up graduating. And I think, I don't know, like there's a lot of girls that I've spoken to in the program that those kind of final months, I don't know whether it's just you reach that threshold of you just can't take it anymore and you switch off. Like I would say that the program did definitely give some kind of trauma. So is it a trauma response that you switch off for those last couple of months? Cause you go, you've just got to get through another day, another week, another month of being here and fake it till you make it. And I think that's in those last couple of months, I know it was especially true for me. I switched off because it was, you were broken down so much that it was just easier to do nothing, to just go along with the program, to just say yes, nod your head, whatever, because you knew that you were getting out soon. I don't know, Sarah, was it the same?
Yeah, I felt like for me, it broke me down. I feel like in the end, it was just like a panda response. Like, it was like you just panda, oh yeah, oh, you know, you were doing this. And I was like, oh yeah, sorry. And you just, it doesn't matter what's true or not in the end. It doesn't matter. Like you just go along with stuff that's not true. And you just, if you get in trouble, you just go, oh yeah, sorry, please forgive me. Like you play the game and you give them their testimony that they want because they have to keep up that 90% success rate bullshit and give them their story and leave peacefully and quietly. And for me, I had the walking it out. Yeah, I had a 1 month walk it out and then a graduation. And the whole contract thing, I think, is part of continuing that control over your life and making sure you stay quiet about the program. Yeah, and it was very strange coming out because as much stuff as like I had problems, right? As much as I had going on, but I was quite independent. I'd been living independently since I was 16. I knew how to buy my food and cook and make decisions and budget my money and stuff. And going in there and coming, having every choice taken away from you and around food as well, which is bizarre because I didn't go in for an eating disorder, but you've got to do your cereal with a measuring cup and have a portion of this. And I came out and I just remember standing in like a supermarket and just getting so overwhelmed. I'm looking at a wall of cereal and a wall of bread, and I didn't even know what to do. Before, it was just like, bang, bang, that's what I'll do, and this is what I need. And now I just, like, I don't know how to make a decision for myself. Yeah, it was just weird. Yeah, so I didn't go to Mercy for an eating disorder, but all the rules around food still applied. So I, you know, portion control and what you could eat and how much you could eat and the, you know, the portion of this and this and this. And so, like, you doing a cereal in a measuring cup and then a yogurt or a milk and then this and then I, so coming out, like, I'd been so independent. I had, you know, problems in my life, but I was very, very independent from a very young age. And I came out and it's like, I just remember standing in a supermarket and not knowing what to do. I'm standing in front of a wall of cereal for 20 minutes and trying to look at the bread. And I'm like, I don't know what to buy. I don't know which cereal to get. I don't know what bread to buy. Like, not knowing just the most basic, like, it's like I'd lost. It's, I think I just became so dependent on Mercy. You're forced to become so dependent on them for every single decision, for structuring your entire day down to the 5 minute increments, all of your food choices, what you can say, what you can do. It's like I just didn't know what to do with myself, and I didn't know what to buy, and I didn't know how to take care of myself and what to eat. And it was so strange because I was so independent going in, and I just was I was so lost. After I came out, it's like all the skills that I did have, I hadn't been empowered, I'd been disempowered. It was so bizarre. Just the most basic things.
Like boiling water.
Oh, yeah, boiling water. So there was a story, and I wrote about it on my blog later. So there was, during the Colour Conference, the Hillsong Women Conference, they bring busloads of women out from Hillsong Church or from the venue where they were doing the conference. And they would bring busloads of women to our house, and everything had to be really, we had to do this ridiculous, like, giant clean. And Nancy Alcorn would come. She was usually preaching there. And it was basically a day to try and get people on board to donate. It was like an open day, and just like, come on, donate to us. Feel sorry for these girls. And it was crazy because we're just normally really, like, locked down, like, and, you know, it was weird. It's all these women, like hundreds of women pouring into our home and like just ogling at us like we're zoo animals, and then popping their heads into our rooms. It's just weird. And then we go to the back area where, like, they normally did our graduations, and they'd have the platform set up. And Son, who, she was a Hillsong, I think her husband is Phil Son, who was the, like, a Hillsong elder. And Susan had been a teacher at Hillsong, Bible teacher or something. And she got up. I'd been there nearly a year at this point. Susan got up and talked, and she kind of did the spook and talked about how, and everything she said was a lie. And I was so shocked. I was so shocked. It wasn't like it could have been a misunderstanding. Some of it was just actively straight out lie. So she was started with a spiel about how we, you know, sorry?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
So, okay, so she started out with the same lies that are in the brochure already, you know, that we have fully qualified psychologists, psychiatrists, dietitians. She said that we do cooking classes in our kitchen and learn how to cook in there. And some of us come from homes, we literally don't know how to boil water. Literally not knowing how to boil water, and everyone is like turning and staring at us, and I just wanted to die. Like, it was, and you're like, it was so, like, ridiculously untrue. Like, who doesn't know how to boil water? But it was just all the stares and just that pity. Like, I feel like we were made props for this fundraising thing, like, you know, like objects of pity, and based on stuff that wasn't even true. And all these just people staring at us. And she went on to say how she is there all the time, and she, you know, hangs out with us and does this and does our, like, our classes. I'm thinking, she's been there once in the entire time I was there, and that was nearly a year. And she that was once in that whole time, but she made out like she was there all the time. Mm-hmm. But I was so shocked. I was so shocked because I couldn't even pretend. Maybe she didn't understand. That was an absolute straight out deliberate lie. And I was so shocked. And I remember a girl standing near me had said, she made some comment under her breath that was a criticism. And one of the staff who was my counselor, she heard it and she took her aside. She kind of frog marched her away because she got in trouble. I was just left really shocked. And Nancy was there. And all of this stuff was said in front of our staff who knew that was untrue as well. And I think it was just quite shocking. You know, you can't say anything. If you do, that happens. Yeah, and we're just standing there like people gawking at us. And some of us, you know, like when people were just wondering, oh, I wonder what you have, and like trying to look at our scars and our bodies, it was just,
oh.
I felt like we were in a zoo. Yeah.
Oh.
It was very dehumanizing. Hundreds of women. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. How far into the program do you two start to question whether you want to be there? And then, like, what's that process like where you decide, no, actually, I disagree with, because that's massive to disagree with the powers where you live and are being indoctrinated and rehabbed? And how does that work?
I would say it's kind of like, I felt like it was more, there was like stages. There was when you went in, you had like that defiant stage where you wanted to try and bend all the rules or push these rules as far as you could. And then you just kind of went into the stage of acceptance and you took on that persona of the mercy girl, which is, as Sarah said, yes, sir, no, sir, kind of it's going along with all the different, all the tasks and all the homework and what they wanted you to do to be a model resident. And then I would say the third and final stage is like either you do kind of keep that persona and you believe it. I don't know, like I never experienced that, but that kind of switching off, you are so broken down that you just need to do anything you can to get to the end of the program. Afterwards, like, it was kind of, there was a mix. There were girls that were still very much pro-mercy, and then there were girls that were very anti-mercy. And I even know for a time, like in the couple of months after I left, I sounded like I was pro-mercy to people that asked, but in my head I was questioning everything because how could all of that have gone down and then I'm still not better? And I think the one thing that broke finally, like, because when I left in 2007, I think it all came out the following year and the program started to get shut down and everything for all the things that they got done for. And it wasn't until girls started, unfortunately, taking their own lives that I realized that it was not a good program. It was not, like, how could these girls be healed? How could these girls that some of them who graduated and were plastered all over propaganda, like mercy propaganda, that they are supposedly healed and doing what God wants for them, and then they take their own lives? Like, it's, sorry, it got dark very quickly, but yeah, it's that kind of.
No, don't, sorry. I think last count there were 6 known women who have taken their lives following a mercy ministry's stay.
It's really, I only know of one person that is still very much pro-mercy, and personally I would also say that they also struggle with a lot of things still to this day, and we're 15 years later, more than that. It has been a very long time, and I know the majority of girls that I was in the program with, almost everybody needed additional help. Everybody was in and out of hospital afterwards. Like, it was, if anything, mercy exacerbated their symptoms. So I guess to answer your question, there were those stages in the program, but then afterwards it's everybody just plummeted off the edge of that cliff. Yeah.
Because after mercy, and especially if you've got the graduate thing, when that whole contract thing was put to me, it's like, well, you know, it's not optional. And if you don't sign, then we may not graduate you. And I feel like I felt responsible because I felt like if the girls in there see me and they look up to me, and if I don't graduate, then maybe it will make them give up too. And then they'll leave and then they'll be out of God's plan and they might die. Like, I feel like things hinged on me. And, you know, it was just, it's such a twisted thinking. It's very hard when you come out because inside you're so broken down, but you feel like you have to talk like you've been conditioned to. So you're very isolated. You're kind of scared to say to someone in the program that you were friends with to say, hey, that was pretty fucked up, right? Like, because you almost, you're still trying to convince yourself. And I think for some people that held on to the pro-mercy thing for so long were people who really craved that approval and belonging from the staff, or people who just, it was too painful. It was more painful to admit actually that program was really damaging and exploited me, and I'm still really unwell and it didn't, you know, heal me. I think maybe to acknowledge that actually that was just a really abusive heap of shit, and that actually harmed people that I care about, and it harmed me. Some, I think for some people that's more painful to acknowledge than like.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I don't know. But yeah, like Brittany, said, I only know one person who still talks like that. Yeah, but I think it really came out. I think a lot of girls, because for a while I actually was running Mercy Survivors, which was the International Survivors Organization that developed as a result of them. And so many girls, because even girls, like when they would write to us and I would be like, wow, I always thought they were really pro and they were like the poster girl, and how many girls actually inside were struggling so badly. And like Britt said, that inside they're questioning everything. And you're like, look, it's, yeah, full on.
I think even the first email that I sent to you, Sarah, through that Mercy Survivors Network, I was so scared to send that email because I didn't know who it was. Like, was this something that was set up by staff to catch us out? Is it something that we were going to get in trouble for if they found out who, like, who was saying stuff about Mercy? But yeah, we've still got an active website. We've still got the Mercy Survivors website and a couple of the socials, but there's a lot of effort involved. And I'm sure Sarah can definitely vouch for that. There's a lot of effort involved in keeping that up, because even though the Australian homes have closed, New Zealand home has kind of changed its name, there are still a lot of girls in America who come through to the Mercy Survivors Network and are still very much affected by it all. Like, it hasn't changed.
So for a bit of history, we were able to contact Ruth Pollard, who is a journalist and at that time was working for the Sydney Morning Herald. And she conducted an excellent investigation, which led directly to Mercy Ministries being shut down in Australia because of the financial exploitation initially, wasn't it? I mean, it was because of offering the professional services that were not so, and it was shut down as a result of that. And the compensation came directly from Darlene Check.
It was the directors within a certain time. I don't know if it was the last 5 or 7 years worth of directors of Mercy. So they were all fined. So that was the ACCC. They were all fined. And and if you were a resident of Mercy at that time, I think that was to do with the Centrelink that they took, because they advertised it as a program that was free of charge. Nancy's whole thing about how that she claimed to not know. I don't believe that anymore. But she claimed to not know that they were taking government funding, because Centrelink is government funding, and we were rationed $30 to pay for period products and tithes and whatever.
And so the process was, when you came into the program, you'd fill out all these forms. So there were Centrelink forms, and occasionally there was somebody like a representative from Centrelink who would come out to the house and help girls fill out forms and do all of that. Personally, I remember mine got knocked back. And I wouldn't say I got in trouble, like especially the disciplines that I received later on in my stay, but I definitely got spoken to like I'd done something wrong when my application got rejected. And I ended up needing to fill out a form to say that I was essentially separating from my parents. So because it all went on your age. And so because I was so young, I was still technically under the government, under my parents. And so putting in a formal statement to say that I'm away from my parents, I'm independent, I'm XYZ, could release that Centrelink funds into my name, aka into Mercy. And in saying that as well, I know, like personally, my mum was still asked every month. She found a whole heap of emails that were the program manager or whoever was looking after the finances of the home would still be asking my mum for X amount of payment for Brittany shopping, X amount of payment for medication. So they were taking money from a lot of different sources. And as I said, that's just personally mine. So I don't know with the 16 to 20 other girls that were in the program how much money they were taking there. In terms of the Centrelink thing, it wasn't actually until 2009 that I got this random letter. So we're talking 2 years after, I think the program had just shut down. I got a letter to my parents' address saying that we've recognized that your residential address had changed. So my residential address for the 2.5 years since, like in between leaving the program and then 2009, was still Glen Haven Road at Mercy. So that was a bit of a shock.
You know if your payments continued to Mercy after you had left?
I don't know. I never saw any payment. So when we, and I'm sure Sarah, you can elaborate on this, like when we managed to get a heap of our files, there was nothing in there about Centrelink. So I'm sure that all of that got destroyed very, very quickly. Yeah, a lot of blank paper and a lot of stuff that was.
You got your files sent to you?
So, yeah, this was another thing. So basically after Mercy was shutting down, so the ACCC thing happened, and for girls who opted in, they were able to get some compensation. There was one of the program staff who wrote to all the girls. She said, I'm personally not going to believe, because she was a graduate who became a staff. She's like, she kind of tried to coerce girls not to take it. But anyway, after that, so some of us wanted copies of our files. Some of us were interested in legal avenues and legal options, and we wanted our files. And a lot of girls have been told, no, you can't. A girl had written to them under Freedom of Information or something, which actually Freedom of Information only applies to government. They said, oh yeah, we can't, you know, Freedom of Information is for government records, you can't have this. And then they were trying to say they weren't, like, you know, medical records. And anyway, I came from a legal background. I used to be a legal secretary in former life, and I just knew some stuff, and I knew lawyers and I knew people. I got some advice, and I ended up speaking with Slater and Gordon, who took on this matter on a pro bono basis because it was a matter of the public interest. They wrote a letter to their stupid solicitor and say they said they were going to file an injunction that they needed to, because we were told in an email that the files were going to be destroyed. And our solicitor's like, no, they're not. We will file an injunction. And that scared them. And anyway, we ended up eventually getting our files for those who requested it. And it was very interesting. I don't know. There were a lot of things that was kind of sent blanked out and stuff. But, yeah, there was definitely nothing in there about Centrelink, but it was very, very interesting. Yeah.
And you got the issue to the New York Times in the end. Tell us a little bit what happened there. With Slate, didn't it?
New York Times. I think when things first came out in the media, because this was a bit before my time, when that Ruth Pollard article came out, I was working at Fairfax in the editorial library.
Okay.
And I didn't see the article. I had a friend from my new church who she'd actually prayed for me a lot around this, like, stuff when I started talking about it. So she knew all about it. She called me, she said, have you seen the news yet? And I said, no. She goes, look at the paper. And I saw it. So I think that was the first, like, when the Australian articles came out, and then followed by some of the Americans. I think the Nashville Scene had published some. There was Cameron Riley's podcast. There were some blogs at that time, that when blogs were a big thing. Sean the Blogger Not did a lot I know you did. Yeah, so, and then there was some waves after that, because I think after they'd shut down, there was a bit more media stuff around then. And then later on, there were some articles. I think Mercy over in the States really tried to push, like, pro-Mercy articles. They knew, they seemed to know a lot of people at the Tennessee, and it was very, very bizarre, because when I wrote to the Tennessee, because Mercy's senior program coordinator or something, she did an op-ed for the Tennessee, and I'm like, I'm looked at the history of that, and there's so many articles like really pushing Mercy, and their staff had gone to like Mercy's ball gala fundraiser things. I'm like, there's something. So when I wrote to them from the Mercy Survivors email address, and I started questioning, like, oh, I was just wondering, suddenly all the articles, like, so a whole heap of their articles disappeared from their website, and I had a screenshot, like, years and years and years, just all articles, and suddenly all this stuff, they didn't tell me, but I wanted to understand the relationship, right? And suddenly all this stuff disappeared, but they really tried to clean up their image. And then there were articles that came out in the States. There was a whole heap of stories around false memory therapy, where because the type of therapy they do, it's just this like guided prayer thing, and like, can you tell me, you know, what the Mercy's idea is, like, you go back to this time in your childhood where, you know, when did this issue start, where is the root of this ungodly belief, and what, and then you're supposed to remember something that happened and what caused the belief. And so it was quite suggestive. So there was a heap of articles, a heap of parents came forward, even some girls that came forward who had believed, come to believe that, you know, all this stuff happened to them. They realized later it wasn't true. There were four articles that came out about that. And then later on, the Slate article came out, and that was quite a good piece. Yeah, it very in depth. So there's quite a bit over the years. And I think Mercy's just, all they have really been able to do is damage control and really try and spend aggressively on their SEO. There was even sock puppets in Wikipedia, editing their page in Wikipedia, and that's documented in there. There's been a lot.
I mean, well, because Slate ended up doing that article on experiences of women in Mercy Ministries, and that's when the SEO really sort of took off, right? Like, they spammed.
Oh, yeah.
And they rebranded as Mercy Multiplied, yeah? So,
yeah.
By all the information being out there, I mean, that if you were to just Google it, you wouldn't necessarily know.
I mean, it was, I think, when the Slate, they were still struggling. They couldn't really get certain things off page one. And I think they thought the dust had settled a bit. And then when the Slate article came out, that was a big hit. Because that also, that was after they changed it to Mercy Multiplied, and that had Mercy Multiplied in the article. So they couldn't break away from that connection. That article came out. Because Mercy, like, they tried to distance themselves, like when the Australian stuff happened and Nancy straight up lied and pretend like she didn't know, and like she was trying to distance herself from all of that, and then they tried to change their name. So they haven't quite been able to do that. Slate, I don't know if it still is, but that was on the first page of rankings for quite a long time. So if the information is there and people want to find it, like, they will be able to find it.
Yeah.
Still, yeah. But, yeah.
But I mean, it's just not as straightforward as it might have been. I mean, they're still operating the same program, like you were saying. Yeah, it's still going on. Mercy Multiplied.
It's still going on in America, yeah. And I think their laws aren't as – there's a whole – it's very much under the radar, but very prominent troubled teen industry. There's so many homes like Mercy. There's ones even worse, like horrible, horrible physical – abuse and neglect. There's so many things that are there, and I think Mercy just blends into the whole scheme of things. But I think as Mercy, I think they tried to have this really polished image and be really out there and be the Christian option. So I think when things come out like that, they really go into damage control, like, and say, no, it didn't happen, or it wasn't like that. Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago, I was in the States, and I thought, you know what, I'm over here now, let's see if they'll let me in. And I reached out to Mercy, like, its headquarters in Nashville, and asked for a tour. I can't remember if I said that I was from the Sydney home. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have included that in the first email. Ended up getting a response, sorting out a time. So book flights in the middle of this trip, organized. I said to my friends that I was going with, I was like, we just need to stop off in Nashville for 2 days. That's all I need. I just need to do something. And went to the home in Nashville, which is the like their headquarters, and met this woman. And it was, I don't know, again, I don't know whether it was like closure or whether, I think from, and everything that you've probably heard Sarah and I talk about today, like it's, you are taught so much. Like there are so many things that you listen to in the program that you're like, that is a flat out lie, but either you're too scared to say something, or if you do say something, you know that you'll get in trouble. And finally, obviously like 11, 12 years later, I had gotten to the point where I'm like, damn this, I'm going to go there and I'm going to tell them that 100% Nancy did have stuff to do with it. And surprise, surprise, Nancy wasn't there. She'd stepped out for the day when I went for this tour, but it was really interesting. I was quite upfront and honest with the girl that showed me through. I can't remember what her actual position was like with Mercy, but she surprisingly was understanding. She knew of things that had happened in Australia, obviously didn't admit any guilt or anything like that. And likewise, like I didn't go in saying, damn you and how dare you and whatever. Like I was quite polite and professional. But it was very, very interesting to see the exact same things going on in the home, like what she was explaining. So it was weird to kind of be walked through a house and this is where our girls do meal prep and this is where our girls listen to their tape series. And it was the fact that everything, as you heard Sarah and I explain what a day in the life was for us, is going on there still to this day. So it's one of the biggest things. And I think I actually messaged Sarah that night, like, I went into their, she showed me through their classroom and where they had like their morning praise sessions and all of that. And there were three paintings on the wall of a rosebud, a rose kind of starting to bloom and a rose in full bloom.
And I think Charlene had those commissioned.
Exactly. And I saw them and the girl was talking, like she was obviously giving this tour that she was rattling off this whole spiel. And I said to her, I was like, when did you get those paintings? And she couldn't tell me. And I messaged Sarah on the way back to the hotel. And I said, you won't believe it. Like for everything that they've said, we never had anything to do with the Australian homes. Those three paintings of the roses were the exact same paintings, the exact same size, the exact same signature, the ones that we looked at in the Sydney home in our dining room.
Darlene had those commissioned for the Sydney home.
Kind of like a massive slap in the face to say we never had anything to do with Australia. And then all of a sudden, 12 years later, I'm looking at these paintings that I looked at, hundreds of other girls looked at when they were being, I guess, traumatized in the Sydney home. But yeah, it was quite obvious that once again, that's just another lie.
History, as we know, is written by the victors, and through the joys of technology, that no longer needs to be the case. Thank you so much, Britt and Sarah, for contributing to the truth, which seems to be in short supply at the places like Mercy, which doesn't seem to have much mercy on people either. They expect it, but they don't dole it out.
Just wear it as a shirt.
And it's so interesting how Sarah remembers so clearly that story of Susan Son. Susan and her husband did, I believe the company was called Sydney Media Collective, and they did all of the media for Hillsong, I think, late 90s, early 2000s, about 7 years. They really promoted and did the media, did those videos, you know, really, really suave, really slick stuff that gave Hillsong a lot of the success that they have today. And they were very, very devoted to the success of Brian and Bobby and to Hillsong. And sometimes the devotion is all made up. And you're probably there thinking, how could this get any worse? Vulnerable young women seeking treatment and giving their best input, you know, all their trust into a place that they were told represented God. I'm here to tell you it did get worse, and the tentacles spread further than you can imagine, and eventually we'll get to that. That's a story for a later date. Thank you for joining us, sitting with us, and being a part of this conversation. The more people that know, the better. The more chances we get to chalk up some points for truth, the better. So please do share this with somebody that you know that you you think will really benefit from it. And there's still so much more to talk about. I've still got another episode for you, and I was like, oh no, we didn't talk about the other really kind of scandalous stuff, so we're going to have to do a bonus to the bonus. I mean, the best is yet to come out. I love that we can put our stories out there so quickly and so easily now. And there's a lot more to this story, so please stick around. Keep a watch for part 3, which hopefully will be with you even sooner than this part 2. There's actually so much going on in the world of Hillsong. We've got cable shows and books and all kinds of things to look at, so bear with me and I'll bring it all to you as soon as possible. Sydney's been in a heat wave for, I don't know, about 3 or 4 months now. It's just been an intolerable sauna, but we're crawling through. It's got to end eventually, right? Please be kind to yourselves. Mosquitoes are going to eat me alive. It's a beautiful night in Sydney. The nights are nice. The days are brutal, though. It's not even summer anymore, so be kind to yourself. Just be heat stroke. Remember to be kind to the person next to you. And if you're one of the 5 people still attending, just keep on leaving Hillsong, yeah? And we'll talk soon. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.